Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week three of us nerdy people read up on a topic and then discuss it from a geeky and very nerdy perspective. This week, I'm your host, Ryan Mossbarger, and we'll be discussing, I want to say it's the movie. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. It is Miami Connection, and top five, if not like top three, is my favorite.
Wait, it's just Miami Connection? I thought it was the Miami Connection.
Either or. Oh. And the kind of corresponding theme is going to be so bad it's good, especially when it comes into
there is no movies. It's just Miami Connection.
Yeah,
that's tough.
I'm joined by two people, each of whom has selected a domain they think connects to our topic and theme this week. They are...
Hey, it's me, Keenan Kodish, returning again. We'll be talking about the movie Dead Snow.
What's up? It's your boy, Pat, and I'm going to be talking about the one, the only, the master of disguise.
Okay, awesome. We're going to start by summarizing our topic and domain before we openly discuss. Finally, we will close with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether today's topic is enjoyable. All right. I'm going to find this enjoyable because I get to talk about Dragon Sound, which is one of my, like, top five favorite things to do of all time.
Friendship!
I've actually listened to the music. There are two separate music videos. Just look up Dragon Sound, and you'll find two music videos, and I listen to them nonstop on loop. I have something wrong with me.
I think you have a lot wrong with you.
but yeah, let's get started.
He just doesn't want to do cocaine. Come on.
I think the best way to start with this summary is reading from the official synopsis for Miami Connection on their official website.
Finally, someone who gets that hint.
I'm going to try it. Going to loosen up a little bit. The brown now cow sow.
How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
The human torch was denied a bank loan.
Torch was denied a bank loan. The year is 1987. Motorcycle ninjas tighten their grip on Florida's narcotics trade, viciously annihilating anyone who dares move in on their turf. Multinational martial arts rock band Dragon Sound have had enough and embark on a roundhouse wreckway of crime-crushing justice.
Just say no.
When not chasing beach bunnies or performing their hit song, Against the Ninja, Mark, played by Taekwondo master and inspirational speaker YK Kim, and the boys are kicking and chopping at the drug world's smelliest underbelly. It'll take every ounce of their blood and courage, but Dragon Sound can't stop until they've completely destroyed the dealers, the drunk bikers, the kill-crazy ninjas, the middle-aged thugs, and the quote-unquote stupid cocaine. Dramatic pause. And the entire Miami Connection.
Question, are you...
It should be noted.
Is that on the back of the box?
Thank you.
Or...
I don't know. That
it's on the website.
That's on the
it
website.
It should
that's
be noted that this movie does not take place in Miami. It takes place in Orlando.
Yeah, but...
Also, be noted that multinational just means that they are different ethnicities.
They come from different places.
Although they're all... But they're not multinational. It is a discussion they have about the director of the band, but let's just make that clear. They're not some famous Dragon Sound.
Yeah. So the Miami Connection is reference to the connect they have to Miami and Orlando.
And the French Connection.
I have the Miami Connection to the drugs.
They got that plug, bro.
Yeah, they got that connect for that good, not good cocaine.
And cocaine accessories.
I chose Miami Connection this week because I fucking love Miami Connection. And I also think the reason I love it, it encapsulates the quality of our, like, the topic of our discussion. It's so bad, it's good. And I think it's a very good example of that type of movie. Everything about it makes me happy. The music, the fight sequences, the dialogue, the very pro camera work, the seeing of random people in the background when you're
but
not
also
supposed to.
The heart-tugging storyline of, what's
exactly.
his name? Kevin, was that his name?
Jack?
It might be. Are you talking about the dude
with the dad.
Father in the military? Yeah. Oh, what was his name? It might be Kevin.
Jeff?
I thought it was Kevin.
No, it's Jeff. It's Jeff.
Either way.
Jeff and Head Ninja, yeah.
Jeff gets reunited with his dad, but it ends up just being him with...
Oh, like, no, that's not Jeff.
Well, no, it wasn't them. It was just some random guy that they covered his hair in flour.
It was just some random black dude. Yeah, they covered his hair in flour to make him look old, but they couldn't just find an old African-American dude to play his dad.
They couldn't even ask him for his dad to come along.
It would have made sense if they used him to save money, but, like, they had a whole separate dude to do it anyway. They should have just found an older guy.
Nah, man, nah. It's so much better this way. And now, I've talked to some of our other cast members, Colin, and he said he doesn't like this type of movies because he's not into...
Fun?
I want to say it's, like, sadism? He believes it's some form of self-flagellation, and, like, the fun
kind
of comes from this, like, hurting of yourself.
Okay. He used those exact words, didn't he?
Which I strongly disagree with. I think good, mad movies are just fun, and they can be funny. Honestly, sometimes more funny than movies that are meant to be funny.
One would argue that all comedy are bad.
Because, all about comedy is setting up an expectation and failing in some way. And it can be funny for a lot of reasons. I like to think the comedy comes from not in all bad movies, but certain bad movies, that they are so close to good, they're just a little bit out of phase. Like, everything they're saying is, like, somebody that this is, like, their third language, and it's going through, like, three layers of, like, it went from, like, I don't know, Spanish to Korean, then Korean to English. Like, there's just something lost in the translation when you put it through that many filters. So everything is, like, there. All the words are there, but the way they're acted, and maybe sometimes the way the words are put together, it just doesn't make... Like, it comes off not right, and it's almost like the uncanny valley of... Like, you recognize something's wrong, but you can't quite... Like, it's like the gestalt of everything that's happening.
None of us chose this to represent because it was just, like, kind of the elephant in the room and way too obvious, but it's the case of The Room where... 90% of the reason why that movie got so popular was because of Tommy Wiseau's accent, and it made it just way more funny.
You know, his accent's made up, which is the worst part about it.
And it's the same thing for Tommy Wiseau. Like, he's at least maybe a second or third time, like, in English maybe his second or third language. Nobody knows where he comes from, but they think it's, like, Eastern Europe. And, like, he kind of wrote it.
No, I call bullshit. I bet he's American. I bet he's from, like, San Diego or some shit. I think it's made up.
But, like, yeah, like, the way he wrote it was, like, stream of consciousness. He didn't really understand, like, supposedly when you meet the guy, he doesn't act like a real person.
He did not.
That all translates into his work, where these people don't seem like real people interacting with each other in a realistic way.
But he did not.
I think it's the same thing in this movie. The thing that kind of irks me about Miami Connection, and some people say that, you know, it's just a bad movie, but the thing is, if it had a slightly larger budget and starred a more conventional, like, 80s action star like Jean-Claude Van Damme, it would have been a summer hit.
Hell,
like,
yeah, no, for sure.
There's nothing about the movie that...
Are you kidding me?
No.
Listen to any Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. The dialogue is butts wild awful.
Don't insult Jean-Claude Van Damme.
But and, like, he's speaking out like a crazy Creole man, just like, like, none of his movies make sense. Like, you don't care what's coming out of his mouth.
The quality of
the
movies.
High kicks.
Yeah. It's just because Jean-Claude Van Damme can do better stunts than anybody in this movie. That's the only thing that makes his movies.
One, I have some things to say about this, but don't touch on Van Damme, right? That man is an inspiration and a hero.
I love Jean-Claude Van Damme, but...
Also, you need to watch Van Damme Johnson.
He's got marble mouth and everybody knows it. it would have been a summer hit, but it starred YK Kim, who was basically unknown outside of probably the Orlando area of Florida. And, I mean, but at the end of the day, it being bad did not change my enjoyment of it at all. Like, it is a bad movie. It's low budget. Cinematography is really bad. The cameras they used weren't super great. All the stunts are balls to the wall, just awful. Like, everything is planned out.
Which you think would be the good thing, but...
But I still found myself, like, enjoying it. And, like, in certain parts of the movie, when I first watched it, I felt real tension in certain scenes. Like, I wanted to see what happened.
Dude, yeah, when the owner of the nightclub is getting confronted by the dude who got muscled out because Dragon Sound stole his spot, and they're just spinning around in circles, yelling at each other. You can't understand what they're saying or anything, but they're just like,
yeah.
I'll beat the shit out of you.
I'll beat the fuck out of you, man. Don't give me my money, motherfucker.
What's going to happen?
I didn't understand what was going on. That was mostly where the tension came from.
Yeah.
The fact that there were ninjas, too. Like, the very opening scene, there's almost no words spoken, and it's just this deal going down, and the ninjas come in, break it up, steal all the shit, and cut people's faces out. And it's just like, it was balls-to-the-wall action, even though it wasn't well shot.
It was still a lot of fun to be had.
It was more like balls-to-the-closet. It wasn't really like a full balls wall. Balls-to-the-closet. You know, it was, you know, it wasn't like a wall.
That's a title and a half right there.
Yeah.
Balls-in-a-closet.
Balls-to-the-closet.
I mean, I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later, about what you guys thought of the movie. We did talk about it a little bit. I couldn't stop myself from kind of asking you guys the question when we watched it.
Yeah.
And to preface, we watched this kind of
together. Yeah.
Together. We as Skyped together. And I bought the movie, which is DRM free, and we shared it together. And we all kind of watched at the same time and kind of made jokes during it.
I feel like that
Mystery
really,
Science Theater. Or
yeah, I feel like that really just emulates the spirit of Dragon Sound, too.
Yeah.
And sharing. And together we will rise up.
Full disclaimer, there are basically two full-length music videos for Dragon Sound in this movie.
Dude, like, it's not even that they had different, like, verses, too. It was just one verse and then a chorus, and then they repeated the chorus.
It's just that we had, like...
Friends for eternity, loyalty, honesty, working together through thick or thin.
And meanwhile, they're singing about this friendship, and they've got freaking drug dealers just drinking beers and doing cocaine, watching.
The best part...
It's just like a 2-minute long shot where nobody says anything besides them, and it just goes back and forth between people dancing, the drugs, and then...
It is more than 2 minutes.
There are two parts of the creation of the tension in this movie. One, somebody is dating... Cameron, I think his name is John, is dating...
No, is it Jack? No.
Yeah, it's John or Jack. I think, but Jack is the guy.
We can just look
the bad
how
guy,
do you
right?
not know this? Hold this on. Is your movie.
Hold
Let's
on.
Just look it up.
I'm doing it.
Edit this out. Editor note.
Editor's note. Make me, bitch.
Okay, YK Kim as Mark. Vincent Hirsch as John is the bassist and Jane's boyfriend.
Ah, so John.
Yeah, so John and Jane, and then Jack is the brother?
Jeff is the brother, yes, I remember that. And Yoshida is the leader of the Gang of Ninjas.
Jim is the Korean African-American keyboardist.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's two main things going on that is causing the tension between Dragon Sound and the local street toughs slash ninjas. Jane, who is the brother to Jeff, who is the leader of the hooligans, is dating Tom? Is that who it is?
Who's Tom? No, Tom's the Italian
John.
One.
John.
Oh, no, John. Yeah. John is dating John. They all have very bland names.
I would like to point out that
so Jane is dating John, and that really pisses off
Jeff.
Because he seems to have some kind of weird, almost
he wants to
incestual need for his sister
I don't
to
think
be
it was,
single.
I don't think it was written that way, but I think...
It definitely came,
but
off,
it came
that
off
that
way.
Sure. I think his issue was that he wants her to focus on school, because he wants her to have a better life.
Yeah.
Because he acknowledged that his lifestyle is not good. However, it provides for them, because they don't have parents.
Dialogue does not pan out that way.
Yeah, they're orphans. He provides for his sister.
Everybody's orphans in this. That's all
I think everyone's an orphan.
Even YK Kim, who is like easily 30 something in this movie, orphan. But okay, so
he's the father figure to the other band.
So there is the Jeff, Jane, John.
He feeds some grapes.
That is. But also, Dragon Sound is coming into this club, and with their good time, fun loving, friendly music, they are stopping people from buying drugs.
Because all they need is friendship.
So Jeff and Yoshito are conspiring to kill them off, because with all this good time music, nobody's doing any blow anymore. And it's not specifically mentioned in the movie, but there is a moment where Yoshito is talking to Jeff. He's like, you need to kill that Dragon Sound, and then we can own the drug market of Orlando.
Because
it's
that
so
makes
dumb.
Sense. Yeah, I definitely
so dumb,
remember
but
that.
I
remember that's happened before. Remember when, the Mafia tried to kill NSYNC? Same thing.
But people just put NSYNC beat a bunch of mafiosos like dogs.
Are you
on
saying
the street.
JT couldn't take him? Come on, we know this happened.
I think I would probably put some more faith in Backstreet Boys, you know? They're from the streets.
Please, they encourage drugs, Backstreet Boys, let's be honest.
We could probably stick on this summary for a little while, but I think we should save some for the discussion.
Probably.
And let's get started on some of these domains.
I would like to point out, though, on this cast page, the only people who get their ethnicities called out are the people in Dragon Sound.
Are the people that are ethnic? Well, they're multinational.
Well, because they're multinational. Yeah,
but, like, Jeff does not get his race. See, Young Joe, as Yashido, is assumed to be some sort of Asian, but they don't specify. But
he's actually super
Diamond,
European.
An Israeli-American drummer. We got Jim, who's the Korean-African-American. Tom, the Italian-American.
Yeah. By the way, did anyone notice that their names are John, Jack, and Jim, all in, you know.
Yep, it's all J's.
They're awful.
That's rough.
That's why it's so hard to remember.
Except for Tom.
Tom? Oh, and Mark.
So we got Mark, Yoshido, and then everybody else is a J. John, Jeff, Jane, Jack,
Oh, even
Jim.
Jane. Yeah, you're right. Man, I guess.
John, Jacob, Dickelheimer, Schmidt.
YK Kim just really liked it.
All right. With the summary out of the way, let's hear about the domains. Let's save some of this good energy for the discussion.
Very good.
Let's hear about the domains, you guys, I think.
Sure. Hey, it's me, Keenan.
Your boy.
Hi, Keenan. Yo, don't steal the your boy.
Come on, Patty Eyed Official.
You talk over me all the time, bish. Let's go.
Well, that is bullshit.
That's not
you
bullshit.
Find me facts.
Okay, I will.
No, right now. Okay. Stop it.
TikTok, gentlemen, TikTok.
So Dead Snow is a 2009. It's classified as a horror/world cinema. I don't know why it's classified as world cinema, but it keeps...
Because it's foreign.
It is about a party of 8 Norwegian medical students travel to a remote Arctic mountain on an Eastern weekend filled with skiing and relaxation. After one of their group disappears while on a solo cross-country hike, a mysterious local resident tells the remaining visitors that in the waning days of World War II, a battalion of Nazi soldiers disappeared into the nearby woods after the residents turned on them, and that their zombified corpses remain on the prowl in the area, trying to protect their lost gold. Well, it's not lost to them, but it's lost to the rest of the Nazis, I suppose. Anyway, so they go there and they try to have some fun. They have fun. They find Nazi gold underneath the cabin. Nazis attack to get back gold, but they're zombies, you see. So now this movie, it actually received mixed reviews. So people did like it, but the reason why people liked it is actually kind of funny, because they either said that was terrible, it was an irrelevant screenplay. And one guy said, it doesn't just hit every horror beat, he pounds it to an indistinguishable pulp. Now that is from the New York Times. Because they really like the special effects, because it was gross. But really, the most people like it is because it's ridiculous, and it doesn't have any plot. Characters have no real motivation to do anything. It just doesn't make any sense, but it's fun to watch, because it's a zombie movie. I picked this because it kind of emulates, I think, the feeling we're going for, where, like, you know, that kind of campy, borderline, you know, terrible screenplay, terrible everything, kind of all comes together perfectly to make an enjoyable experience. I also picked it because it actually has a sequel, unlike Miami Connection, I want to point out.
What?
I don't want to say it, but it's called Dead Snow, Red vs. Dead.
That's
which is
weird.
A direct sequel. One of the survivors from the first movie then has to contend with more Nazi zombies, and then he recruits zombie Russian Soviet soldiers on his side to fight them.
World War II had a lot more zombies than I previously thought it might.
Oh, have you? Do you come read a book, Ryan? Jeez.
Did you not play Call of Duty?
That's historic.
Yeah, but
fact.
In Call of Duty, you kill them all. Call of Duty, the zombie
you never
stuff
kill,
takes place in the
you
past.
You never kill them all. Have you ever finished a Call of Duty zombies match? No, they just keep coming.
Yeah, there are also conveniently no winter levels of Call of Duty Nazi zombies, so how do you know that that's not where they all went?
Got a point.
They just survived.
To just the winter, not a place, yeah. Just winter.
Dead Snow, in my opinion, was made very earnestly. They really wanted to make like a gross, scary horror movie. Dead Snow is kind of like this super campy comedy, I would argue. It's actually classified as a comedy. when it is sold, because they intended it to be that way. So I think this is an example of someone who like made something very earnest, received the feedback they did, which was like, that's so bad, it's good. They're like, all right, let's, you know, let's continue on, which happens with other things in this kind of category. And I just wanted to bring up that aspect of these kind of movies.
I would also like to point out that I've never seen another movie where somebody kills something else with a snowmobile.
Oh, that happens. Yes.
That happens in Dead Snow, and it was fucking hilarious.
He puts an MG42 on it, too, at one point.
That's true, yeah. Like,
there's definitely some kind of James Bond movie where that happened.
That's with a snowmobile?
Yeah.
Like, runs him over and
I can imagine James Bond in, like, Alps with a snowmobile, like, running over some...
Maybe.
German bad guy.
Bronson, I think, had a snowmobile.
I think he had a snowmobile, but I'm thinking...
I mean, it definitely happened on Archer.
Probably. Well, okay, Archer's different.
You're right, Archer, you know?
These movies that have a pretty high budget as well as trying to go for the so bad it's good tend to go overboard on the stunts and the like CGI and making things like just so grotesque that it shocks you, and that's also why I think they do so well. Is because people like to get shocked. They don't like to know exactly what's happening in movies, otherwise they wouldn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
So you think the crazy amount of gore is like a way that they can kind of overcome people's expectations?
It's not even just the crazy amount of gore. It's just like the fact that it's so bad that nobody would ever expect it to be this bad is partially why they enjoy it.
Yeah. I think
nobody would go into that and be like, there's no fucking way this idiot sat here and wrote, like, this girl turns into a beaver and stomps her new tail on the floor. Like, no, but that happens in Zombievers.
Oh, that's right. That's a thing.
Oh, wow. I've not seen that one.
Yeah. I watched just, like, the beginning of it. That's
you're just coming up with a scenario.
I was just bringing up more B-list, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, I think that is a good aspect of it. We'll bring that up in the discussion.
All right.
Yeah, all right. I think we should move to me. Are you gonna introduce me, or should I just do it myself?
I didn't introduce Kenan.
That's true. Well, it's your boy, back again, trying to talk about this Master of Disguise. And before I get started, I would like to bring up some reviews of the Master of Disguise.
I want to make it clear to everyone that until this podcast, I actually did not know the Master of Disguise was poorly reviewed. I want to put that out there. I thought
brought up that I was doing this, and Keanu was just like, but that's just a good movie.
And I was 100%, I wasn't like, it's a good movie, you know, like Dead Snow's a good movie. No, I had no idea.
I didn't know it was rated this bad. I knew, like, it tanked Dana Carvey's career, but I didn't realize it was this bad.
No, I honestly, me and my family watched it multiple times all the time when I was younger.
I used to watch it, like, once a week.
Well, it's because we were kids when it came out, I feel like.
It holds up. Bit. I watch it every once in a while. It does hold up. I don't get it.
I think it's great. But, to my point, the New York Post, Jonathan Foreman at the New York Post said, and I quote, "No one but a convict guilty of some truly heinous crime should have to sit through the Master of Disguise, an unbearably tedious and unfunny comedy." And I think one of the best summaries of this movie was written by Dennis Harvey from Variety, saying, "Dana Carvey as a chameleonic crime-fighting imbecile is noisy, colorful, and fart-gag-filled enough to amuse undiscriminating audiences under the age of 10. So, with that said, The Master of Disguise is about a family who are a long line of secret agents known as Masters of Disguise. Their last name is literally the Disguisees, and it's just it's crazy. But they end up breaking up a smuggling ring back in, like, the 70s in Italy. So, when they do that, the father, Fabrizio, sends his son Pistachio, which is the main character of the movie.
Get it?
he goes to America with him to, like, kind of escape this life. They open an Italian restaurant, and eventually the guy who leads the drug ring back in 1979 gets out of prison and kidnaps the father and the mother of Pistachio, forcing Pistachio to go into this life of secret identities and pretend to be other people, disguise himself to go and save his mom and dad. Meanwhile, mom and dad are being used by this villain to try to steal legendary artifacts. But the thing is, every single time this villain is in a scene, there's always a fart joke. the whole running gag is that he is a very flatulently charged... He can't laugh
without farting, yeah.
...person. Yeah, every time he laughs, he farts. He'll crack jokes about the about the disguises all the time, and then just it'll culminate in a fart, which is supposed to elicit a
comedic,
like a laugh from the audience, which if you're apparently under the age of 10, you will find funny.
Or convict.
Probably find it funny now.
Yeah.
Brent Spiner just like tootin'. Yeah. I'd laugh at
it's fucking
that.
Screech from Saved by the Bell.
No, that's Data from Star Trek.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Data. Are they not the same fucking person?
No,
they're
not.
No. They both have like kind of big schnoz, I guess. Dude. Also, I don't want to interrupt you, but I just want to read this one review by the BBC.
Motherfucker.
This film being so bad, it makes other movies such as Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo, seem like the comic equivalents to Citizen Kane.
Wow. Yep. That's rough.
It's vicious.
Throughout this movie, though, Pistachio, who talks with a very, very shitty Italian accent and makes the dumbest faces in the world, transforms into over 30 other identities. And it's like, it really showcases the genius that is
Dana Carvey.
Yeah, Dana Carvey. Who was on like SNL and all these crazy
Wayne's
things.
World. And...
Yeah.
Well, he's great.
Just like, oh, this is him trying to like save his career by going into an Adam Sandler movie. It's just like, no, this is him using his talents to make something that was targeted towards kids in the first place and then just seen as something meant for adults. So like,
it's so good.
It's just, when I saw this as a kid, I latched onto his turtle identity. There's one part in the movie where he has to go to the turtle club and he like gets this huge suit that makes it look like he's in a turtle shell.
Yeah.
And he talks like, am I not turtly enough for the turtle club? And he just literally says turtle over and over and over. And at one point, emulates a snapping turtle and bites this dude's nose off. Like, who would think of that?
Guys. I forgot how fucking bananas this
like,
movie
it's insane.
And then he spits it back on. You forgot that part.
He spits it directly back on, and there's no damage whatsoever. It was crazy.
I just found... because I was trying to find that review. I just found a worse review. If you read a little bit, apparently Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian said, but criticizing Carvey's characterizations and suggesting to the potential audience member that you, quote, you might want to put the shotgun in your mouth.
Oh, yeah. So,
Jesus.
The angry video game nerd.
The crazy
not
thing is, it was a financial success.
Oh, yeah.
It was $40 million.
It made $43 million, yeah.
What was it,
it was amazing because kids loved it. But at the same time, I was watching a review from the Nostalgia Critic, and he straight up wanted to kill himself at three different points in this movie. And I was like, bro. It's not that bad. Like,
no.
I enjoy the shit out of this movie.
Good.
I think it's
a good
hilarious.
Movie.
I think my only gripes with it are some of his identities rely heavily on racist stereotype.
A little. No, not a lot.
A lot. There's one where he plays a snake charmer and puts, like, blackface on or brownface to be
Indian. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Which is even worse than that fucking, what's that movie? Or what was that TV show that Master of None brought up that said it was like,
oh, there's one.
That's certainly problematic.
I can't remember what it's called.
There's a movie, I can't remember the name of it, but the details, to get a tuition into college, a guy uses blackface to get a
scholarship.
Oh, affirmative action?
Affirmative action.
Yeah,
so he can get he could use affirmative action to get into a very nice college. He used blackface. It was in the 80s, and even then it was balls out insane.
That's
he stole the tuition from another black kid.
That's several fucked up things all mixed into one.
Yeah.
There's some problems with the movie for sure, but I feel like the genius of Dana Carvey being able to portray all these different characters in the same movie is just what makes this movie so good to me, and the fact that I still find it funny, because apparently I have the comedic sense of a 10-year-old.
Yes.
What?
Apparently I was a convict on death row.
Yeah. We did some heinous crimes to sit through that movie.
Yeah, definitely. All the time.
So with all of our amazing topics and domains summarized, let's move on to what I hope is such a good discussion. I love talking about this movie so much. All right. So I guess I'll start out. I'll ask you guys the same question that I asked when we stopped watching. Like, what do you guys think of the movie?
I thought it was made on a film that it recorded moving pictures of humans and added sound to them for entertainment purposes.
I think that the movie was... It kind of transcended what its original purpose was supposed to be.
Oh, definitely.
I like the use of transcending.
To me, I saw it as YK Kim trying to, like, show, I guess...
Don't do drugs, do martial arts?
I don't know. To me, it was... Yeah, well, don't do drugs, but at the same time, he was like... There were a lot of parts in it where it seemed like he was almost trying to teach the usefulness of Taekwondo.
It was definitely a little bit of an advertisement for him.
Yeah. Like, there were times where he was just sparring with his teammates, and they would, like, come at him with fake knives, and he would, like, show how you could get rid of it without being armed, and, like, he was a lot of, like, trying to escape from...
like, attackers.
Attackers and stuff. So I thought it showed... I guess, I don't know when Taekwondo really got popular in America.
It was definitely big. Like, I grew up near...
The 90s, at least.
Yeah, in the 90s. Like, yeah. I grew up in Florida in the 90s, like, kind of on the Gulf Coast. Not too far from Orlando, maybe, like, three, four hours from Orlando. And, like, Taekwondo was, like, the fucking bee's knees. Like, everybody was in it.
So I just wonder if movies like this were part of why that started to get so popular, but obviously because it didn't have a great public reception at its launch or release.
It was probably only screened to, like, 12.
But he was trying, you know, he was just trying. There were some moments that were slightly problematic. Like, obviously, it was back in the 80s, so there was a lot of, like, sexist stuff with them catcalling people on the beach. But,
I always forget about that scene because it's just so awkward.
Yeah, there's one where he trips.
Baby, what's going on?
And he ends up tripping and falling into this group of, like, four women. And instead of actually pushing him away, they just keep pushing him back and forth between two of the women.
So he's just getting, like, slapped up.
So he's just, like, yeah, getting slapped up, but they just keep saying, go away!
He's not trying to get out of it.
And then his friend just isn't pulling him away. Yeah,
they say, go away, but they're not trying to push him away, they're just pushing them back and forth between each other.
He's not trying to get away.
And he's not, yeah, obviously. But then his friend ended up dragging him out by the ankles.
Super awkwardly by his foot, just, like, not even really doing
it. He probably could have just, like, got up and left if he didn't, like, try to drag him.
Yeah. But between the feel-good message of don't do drugs, friends are, like, what's really important.
Friends forever.
And, like, go to college. Like, there's a lot of situations where they're at UCF. And
if she had just gone to college, none of this would have happened.
It was really nice, you know? I enjoyed my time watching it, for sure. And that's what a movie should do. It should make you feel good that you watched it.
That's true. I'll go with that. I still feel a little bad about, like, the whole idea of these kind of movies. Just because, like, he made this movie, and I agree with, you know, what Pat said. Like, I enjoyed the fact that it was what it was, and I enjoy how ridiculous and campy it is, and how, you know, it's so much more ridiculous than you expect. And I think that's, like, a key point for these kind of movies. It has to go beyond what you thought would be bad. Like, in Dead Snow, there's a point where, like, they take a Molotov, right? And they're like, we'll throw this at the zombies who are outside the cabin. And they throw it. The window, they want to throw it out a window. The window, mind you, is, like, 2 feet from them. They throw it, it hits the side of the window, and then begins burning down the cabin.
Excellent.
So that is just how ridiculous, and I knew they'd fight, I knew they were zombies. And as Pat said before, they used a snowmobile. I did not expect them to put machine guns on the snowmobile and mow them down.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. However, the thing is, I always feel a little bit bad about these movies because a part of me thinks, you know, YK Kim wrote this to be, like, a really cool action movie and to be, you know, really authentic, you know? And I'm just like, ah, man.
Yeah, but that's kind of what makes it good. Like, for me, it's good when a movie that's bad is blissfully unaware of the fact that it's bad.
Yeah. That is definitely part of it.
Because you can tell they weren't, like, trying too hard. That's why
there's a genuine quality to the movie.
They're trying so hard to be, like, he was trying so hard to be this action movie that it ended up being.
But I don't think he was trying that hard.
Like, but yeah, he was trying hard to make an action movie. He wasn't trying hard to make a comedy.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where the genuine, like, quality. I think a lot of really good, like, quote-unquote, like, good bad movies, the people that were there having fun, loved every second of doing it, or potentially hated every second of it. It could be, I think it's a spectrum.
Like The Room.
But they did it with, like, a genuine quality that it bleeds into that effect where I was talking about, like, everything is just out of phase. Everything is, they're doing it so hard, but everything is just, like, the words are a little bit weird. Like, the blocking's not right. Like, there's a scene when that, what's his name, Jim? When he goes out and, like, gets the letter from his father or whatever, like, he actually, like, walks out.
Toward
the camera, almost like as in a play. And he starts, like, going through his dialogue, and everybody's in the background, like, watching and listening to him.
And then,
like,
YK Kim comes forward, touches his shoulder a little bit.
The amount of bad touch YK Kim does in this movie. There is also a scene right before this where he just grabs a bunch of grapes and force feeds it into everybody's mouth as they're trying to do other
one
things.
By one.
He is the father figure, all right? That's how my dad fed me grapes. I'm sure that's how your dad fed you grapes. Come on.
He always, like, in every scene, he always, like, when he gets the letter, too, in the mail, like, he jumps up and, like, grabs the letter from him. He's like, oh, this is great, this is great. And, like, they're all touching on it. Like, YK Kim must be a very touchy-feely kind of man.
Yeah.
What I don't get is, like, parts of it that are like that. I don't understand, like, when they spar, they, like, really slow, like, you can tell it.
Oh, it was real bad.
Yeah, but my question is like, if he's like a renowned martial artist.
He is, but that doesn't mean the rest of the cast was.
But he didn't want to hurt him with his chops and his redirects.
I mean, I'm just saying, you could have. It feels like he's like pulling back like so much though. Like when he only had to pull back like a little bit. Like it seems like these things are easy to do, and he just didn't. He just couldn't do them right. It was great.
I mean, he's not a professional actor. He's not, like, all this other stuff.
Oh, Stuntman's different. I agree. You know.
I think with what he was given, he did the best he could.
Yes, the best he could.
A lot of it is showing the beauty of Taekwondo. Like,
you
gotta show the beauty of it. And a part of that is the slow,
not about the violent,
graceful movements.
It's a lifestyle.
All right. So, I think, another question. So, Keenan, you said your movie almost, like, what I have in my head is like the sci-fi kind of B movie where it almost seems as if it's bad on purpose. Do you get that vibe from your movie, or do you think they were genuine and it just came off that?
They were genuine with the first one. However, the second, like they were trying to make a horror movie. The second one, however, Red versus Dead, very clearly is more comedic. And kind of throws that to the wind of, like, they're genuine, and they kind of play on what they used before to make, like, this really ridiculous, hilarious movie. Yeah, like these, you know, the Nazis are, like, killing this little tourist spot, right? But they need gas for their tank, so, like, they, like, stab, the tank guys stab a tourist and, like, take his, you know, intestines and, like, use one end to go into the guy, like, a van gas, like, a gas tank of a van and use it, like, the hose technique. I don't know what it's called, like, using a vacuum to, like, get, you know, gas from one car to another using this man's intestines.
Siphoning?
Yeah, siphoning.
Yeah.
Using a man's intestines to fill their gas tank on their tank. And they just kind of, like, they have a bunch of, like, these very quirky characters. Like, they find, like, a bunch of, like, American zombie killers. And kind of, like I said, it leans in. Are you listening to the music right now? Sorry, you were bobbing your head.
I'm not going to lie. Every time I have a moment to myself, I am, like, especially when I'm thinking this movie, my mind goes straight to...
To Against the Ninja.
Against the Ninja.
Of course. Yeah, but, like, they just kind of lean into that. So I think that's something that happens with a lot of these kind of movies, is that they have, like, a bad... Is that sometimes whenever they have a sequel, they lean into that. And I think that... I actually respect that a lot. Because some people try to, like they make a bad movie, really try to defend their work. It's like, it's not this, it's not that. And then they get, like, almost angry that people, like, think it's kind of like a cult status. And I kind of like when people are like, you know what? We tried, but people still enjoyed our product. So we're going to make another one to appeal to that audience. Yeah, whether or not for like for purely a business sense, but also like I respect that decision.
Yeah, I think that's important. Like, it is good when the director or the people involved are like good sports about it.
Yeah,
Tommy Wiseau. People say like he's maybe not the best sport. He wasn't the best sport about it when it happened, but now he's a good sport about it and actually claims that he was going for it the entire time. I can appreciate an artist creating something, trying to create something, failing, but people still finding beauty in it, and that art is still, like, taking responsibility for it. Not just in, like, oh, I did something bad, but, like, yeah, I didn't mean to, but I made a different kind of art.
Exactly.
So, Pat, your movie, yours was, like, a big budget. It had Dana Carvey in it. It had a bunch of other people in it that were
it was made by Adam Sandler. Yeah,
relatively big stars at the time. Do you think? I don't want to say the same thing. I don't think they meant for it to be a bad movie.
Again, I think they were really trying to target the immature audience and kids.
So yeah.
I think inherently, when you make a kids movie, it's typically bad for adults, with the exception of a movie like The Incredibles, which is just all around great.
Do you think Master Disguise is the good kind of bad or the bad kind of good?
Oh,
so
that's what I'm kind of angling at.
Yeah, this is tough for me because with what I was saying about things being genuine earlier, I can very clearly tell that nothing in Master of None is genuine.
They passed Master of Disguise?
It's literally just Dana Carvey trying to show off. He oftentimes does not make eye contact with the other characters.
He's just there for his bit and he bounces.
He will, just really try to show off and go over the top with his hilarity. But at the same time, I feel like that's partially what makes it good. So for me, it's a bad movie that's good because of the fact that he was trying to make it like a one-man show and he wasn't really trying to make a good product, in my opinion. He was just trying to show this is what I can do, look at all the impressions I can do, because that was what he was famous on SNL for, and he was just trying to break back into the market because his career was starting to decline at that point. But at the same time, it's he was making such a big budget film that it should have been good and ended up bad, which is partially what made it good after all. It's pretty difficult to...
Thinking back on it, the plot is pretty much several different SNL skits, linked together with, this 100%. Little bit of plot.
There's one scene where it's towards the climax where he dresses up as Scarface almost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's very clearly Scarface.
Yeah. So he's just sir, do you have a tiny wiener and some nuts? And he just the waiter's what are you talking about? Taking as an insult. And then he looks on the plate and he holds up a little cocktail wiener and some nuts. And he's just like I said, you have a tiny wiener and some nuts. And I'm just bro, come on. That's just come on. And then there's another part where he's...
Low-hanging fruit.
Comedy gold.
Yeah, he's talking in Italian about this woman that he's trying to hire, who he ends up marrying later, saying that her butt is too small, but because it's a kids movie, kind of, and they're trying to get that PG rating, they have to say it in Italian. So
because kids can't read.
Kids, and they can read, but the word he says is actually, it means... It's a more vulgar way to say butt.
Mm.
So, since it's in Italian, kids don't know. And, maybe they're trying to throw that in for the adults, because there are plenty of kids' movies that throw in humor.
Well, the Italian kids.
The Italian-speaking adults watching Master of Disguise.
It's a very big
anybody
audience.
Anybody who knows romance language would know that it's, the more vulgar way to say it. Because it's very similar to a vulgar word in Spanish that also means it's very similar to,
I just imagine other one
things.
Guy in the theater being like,
oh no, he Italian man. Yeah.
Holy shit.
But the thing, it's just there are plenty of kids movies that try to throw in adult humor to make it more interesting for the adults who inevitably have to be dragged along. And I think that's bullshit, because if you're an adult and you have children, you should enjoy the shit that they enjoy, because they're their happiness should make you happy. If you do not enjoy kids stuff, you shouldn't have kids. But it seems like they tried too hard in Master of None to appeal to both.
Just laying down the law for you parents listening.
Yeah. It seemed like in Master of None,
if you don't like kid stuff, you should just put your kids up for adoption.
Pat, parenting pros.
No, you just shouldn't have them in the first place, man. It's stupid. Or hire a babysitter to do that shit. Anyway.
You're right. If you can't raise a kid.
Have no informal contact with your children.
No.
Pat Brem.
No casual contact with
your
child.
My main point being, Master of None tried too hard to appeal to a broader audience when they really should have just doubled down and focused on the immature audience of adolescents and kids. But they tried to throw adult humor in, and that's kind of what ruined it for me, because that's where I feel the cheapness comes from. When I'm watching The Wiggles or some shit like that, which I don't do often, but...
That's all right. This is a safe space.
Learning so much about you, Pat.
There will be a clip on YouTube, and I'm just fruit salad, yummy, yummy, whatever. They're trying to keep it simple. they're trying to keep it simple for the kids to enjoy it, and I appreciate that. Like, to me, that's an art form in and of itself, is making something so simple and so silly that it's amusing to kids. It's got to, like, if you get too complex and if you get too adult, then they start to lose interest. They don't want to watch it. So they tried too hard with, in this movie, in my opinion, to appeal to both.
Yeah, I think
I get that.
The Adam Sandler formula started breaking down around this
time. Yeah, definitely.
Because I think,
like, Happy Gilmore was peak.
Yeah.
Fucking Happy Gilmore.
Because I think Happy around Madison. The time people could start getting it from different places, like, I want to say a lot of, like, small stuff was starting to pop up. What was that one show on HBO that had
Crank Anchor?
There was a couple of, like, the Ben Stiller Show kind of things that were popping up that had the ridiculous humor around this time. They failed to some extent, but you could get it more places, and it was artistically better. Instead of it just being random, it was not. It was procedural, but it came off random or it had random elements
in it. Yeah.
So I think this is definitely maybe one of the death knells of the Adam Sandler classic kind of
for sure
bullshit movie. Like, oh, let's all get fucking high and drunk and, like, come up with a script in a weekend and get somebody to pay for it.
And like you said, it felt like a lot of different SNL skits kind of stitched together. And to me, I enjoy SNL, but it was, to me, the variety of SNL is what makes a whole episode out of it. It's like you have all the different cast members, all these different skits, and this was just one really long skit.
Yeah.
Which kind of ruined the joke a little bit, but at that point, you're so far into it that it just becomes even more ridiculous. Like, you cannot believe you've been sitting through an hour and 20 minutes
of this SNL.
Like, of just one dude just doing impressions the entire time. 30 different ones. It's crazy. You're just like, gotta give it to the man.
Some of them racy, props. Some of them okay. Oh, I remember. Yeah. It's Mr. Show. Mr. Show was on HBO and, like, around this time, I want to say. Like, early 90s, late 2000.
Yeah.
And they got, like, real big for that kind of almost random, weird comedy. I bought Miami Connection. I thought it was, I rented it when I first heard about it, and then I bought it for us to watch. I think one of the greatest, and I bought, like, the extra, like, $10 edition that has all the behind the scenes and deleted scene stuff. So I'm like,
why didn't we watch those?
Well, it was kind of late when we watched it.
That's true.
So my question, and I think one's want of to own something is a great notifier of, like, how much you care about it. Would you guys buy it?
Yes.
Probably. I'm going to say probably.
I own Master Disguise as well.
At this, like, the ending ruins it for me because, like, it's just a cheap ending. Like, he gets his parents back. He defeats the villain, which is...
What about cheap? It's cookie cutter.
Pretty funny because it's cookie cutter, yeah, which in my opinion is, like, a cheap way to end it. Like, there's no surprise in the end. The surprise came from all of his different portrayals.
He resisted, like, all those big booty ladies. So I think that was pretty, you know, that was a big twist.
Yes,
that was important for me to see him overcome that. So that was
his disdain for tiny butts.
Yeah, he would then marry a tiny butt. His disdain
for those tiny culos.
A tiny butt
woman.
Which,
to be honest, I can understand that phobia. Like, who, tiny butts, get away from me.
That's not something you can, like, really control.
Well, one, it can. Two,
plenty of people have tiny butts. They need love too. Let's not body shame,
that's
bro.
That's not what Instagram says.
Instagram is bullshit. Okay,
I've seen so many things on Instagram where if I drink a milkshake, my butt will get big.
Yeah, it's a fact.
Do you say that's not right?
I mean, it depends. It could go to your stomach. It could go to your thighs. It could go fucking anywhere. Or you could just have a crazy fucking metabolism, and that shit doesn't go anywhere. Like, there are a bunch of different body types, and that's not cool anymore, but back when Master of None came out, it was apparently cool to body shame people. But, more importantly, the very, very...
Oh, wait,
when you
wait,
sat wait, through what?
Did you see Master of None, or Master of Disguise?
Oh, yeah, I just realized.
Oh, yeah, I did say Master of None.
All right. Just
Master of Disguise. Anyway.
They're basically the same thing.
They are kind of the same.
Yeah, Jason Sari, Daniel Carvey, same
there thing. There is Italian influence in both.
There is a lot of it. Mi dispiace. Come si dice my alarm clock fucked up. Anyway, the very, very end of the Master of Disguise, after you've sat through an hour and 20 minutes of just the fucking most ridiculous shit you've ever seen, he is sitting there talking to somebody and, like, saying goodbye to you. He's, like, waving goodbye. And then the camera starts to, like, pull out a little bit. He goes back, and then he's like, oh, he's still here? Get out of here. I'm trying to, like, have this conversation. Ha, 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 ha. And just, like...
I love those. I'm sorry. I love those bits.
I hate those. It's just, like, bro.
So you hated the Deadpool, because Deadpool basically did the same.
So you hate Ferris Bueller? Is that what you're saying?
I did not hate Ferris Bueller because he did it in a less shitty way. Well, and I also think it's the because rest of Ferris Bueller is just way better than Master of Disguise.
Like, I would argue it's because Ferris Bueller, from the get-go, it breaks the fourth wall. So by breaking the fourth wall, it makes more sense.
I don't know. That's my point. It's like, Deadpool breaks the fourth wall all the time. Ferris Bueller breaks the fourth wall the entire time. And those movies are just, in general, better movies. So I didn't mind it as much because those were funny.
I'm pretty sure Miami Connection is on the same level as Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'm just saying.
You didn't even like the movie.
I would argue for that, yeah.
Straight up were, like, after we watched this movie, you were all aboard the, well, that was a movie.
That was a film.
Like,
definitely. Sound. That was sarcasm.
So you're saying after you watched Ferris Bueller, you were like, well, that was a movie. Oh my goodness.
That had moving pictures
and an audio track.
Both,
Ferris Bueller is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like,
one, I was being sarcastic 5 minutes ago. Two, both those statements are not wrong. They are both movies of pictures.
The way you said it made it seem
like... Yes, your statements were factual. It was the way that you said that.
It's what you were implying.
Yeah.
The implication.
Oh my
God. To me, that movie is, you watch it one time every couple of years or so, and I'm talking about Master of Disguise now.
Yeah.
It's like once every couple of years. You can't really do it all that often, whereas Ferris Bueller...
So you wouldn't own...
Every single sick day.
Master of Disguise.
Every single sick day. I would not pay for Master of Disguise.
Yo, okay. I do want to say something, though, because I've been thinking about it since you said it, and I wanted to bring it back up in the discussion, so I'm going to do that now.
Okay.
You said, looking back, and this is actually a complaint I have. I don't know if I brought it up. No, I don't know if I brought it about 80s movies. I don't know if I brought it up on this podcast before, but you said it, like, frankly, probably for, like, as much as an 80s movie as it is, it's actually not that bad. I actually have this... Like, I have this saying that I remember people, like, ask me, like, oh, what about this movie? And if it's, like, this format that I hate a lot, in which I say, oh, well, it's an 80s movie, so a bunch of stuff happened, and then at the end you're supposed to feel, like, some sort of closure. Because there are movies from the 80s in particular that it's literally, like, a vague plot, and then a bunch of scenes happen, and then at the end there's just no reason for you to be like, and that's it. It's like this. There was
this
movie.
Do you want to know a good movie that's like that? It's called Never Too Young to Die. It is. I want to say it's on par with Miami Connection. It is ridiculous.
All right, I will look it up. But the one I'm thinking of, for example, is this movie called Johnny Be Good, which had Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh fuck yeah!
No, because none of that, a bunch of things happen in the movie, and at the end, you're supposed to feel satisfied. He's a football star, he has all these misadventures at the colleges, then they try to frame him for rape, using Robert Downey Jr., his supposed best friend, and then Robert Downey Jr. says, oh, well, they're gonna give me a scholarship, and then he's like, oh, well, that's okay, and then, like, he just ends up going to community college after beating the rap. You're supposed to be okay with that movie?
Oh, I guess anyway, I remember all the fucked up parts of movies from my childhood.
No, but, like, what I mean is there's, like, a bunch of 80s movies where, like, plot, like, doesn't really matter. Like, I just watched this movie called, that I think was made in, like, 91. It's called Cast a Deadly Spell. It is a mixture of 1940s noir and fantasy. It's, like, this alternate history. It's got Fred Warren in it, as well as Julianne Moore and Clancy Brown. Fun movie. However, there are plot points in it that just don't make sense, that just are never brought up again. Like, for example, in this movie, Cast a Deadly Spell, a witch gives him, like, this medallion to protect him. Sorry, it's like a bracelet, and he doesn't take it off, and it's never explained why she gave it to him. And at the end, it's just a loose end that's never tied up. So this happens a lot, in my opinion, in 80s movies. That there's just a bunch of these, like, plot elements that just never come to fulfillment. And it's just a really weird combination. At the end, you're supposed to feel
okay. Miami Connection's tight. So name one plot point like that in Miami Connection. Come on.
I agree with you, which is why I'm saying, looking back on it, besides, like, production quality, because, you know, even for the 80s, there's a lot of the time where I'm like, you know, now that I think about it, this probably should have done well in the 80s.
It should. It's such a good movie.
This probably, you know what, this could hold up in the 80s, you know? It's like I watched Young Guns the other day, and Young Guns just, what the fuck was that movie? A bunch of stuff happened, and then we're supposed to feel okay because, like, he shoots the bad guy at the end? What the fuck?
I hate to stop this discussion because I can talk about Miami Connection literally all night, but we do have listener feedback. This is from Jasmine Baker. My question is, why would anybody watch this movie a second time? And the answer is, it's fucking great.
To catch the fucking nuances, You goddamn ignorant.
Disclaimer, Jasmine is my girlfriend.
Whoa. You should watch what you're saying there, bucko.
All right, well, that was a loaded fucking question. You know? Anyway, you know. I do just want to say, though, that because there is a lot of nuances, I think you... Oh, sorry. There's a lot of nuances that come up in it, and I think that's funny. The nuances are so bad they're good, which is why I think you want to watch it again, because there are times I've watched bad movies, and I've watched it again, and I just was like, oh my god, that's how bad it was. Like, it compounds and it makes it even better.
To be fair, I would watch this. I've watched it for a second time. I will most likely watch it for a third, not that soon in the future. And there will probably be a fourth and a fifth and a sixth, most
definitely. You've only ever watched it four times?
Yeah, you're going to keep coming back for
I've watched it two and a half times so far.
Ever?
Well, so far. I've only discovered this movie within the last couple of months.
Okay.
And then Colin posted something with it asking, what is your go-to shitty flick, which I take great, umbrage at. It's not shitty. It's amazing. One person, Josh, puts The Village. And then somebody Village named Rich says Grease 2. It's bad enough to cause an aneurysm. I will agree The Village and Grease 2 are bad. I just don't know if they are good, bad.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know, honestly. I got a bunch that I usually watch. Because there's a bunch of movies that I think are really good that people then tell me are bad. Like, for example, on the podcast, I had Wizards. And I really like Wizards. Apparently,
didn't you also have the Dark Crystal?
I don't know if I did that. I think that was Jeff, but it's possible.
That's still a terrible movie.
Well, see, this is once again where I run into this. Like, it's not a bad movie, you know. I just really enjoy those movies, so I would say like Wizards or like the Dark Crystal. Actually, I do watch the Dark Crystal every once in a while. I'll be like, you know what, I should watch the Dark Crystal. I can't wait for the prequel series.
I do get an itch for certain bad movies.
It's a feeling.
It's just a feeling. Like, you know, I don't want to watch anything complicated, and something that's going to make me feel happy.
When I want that, I just watch like The Office.
That's
or
true.
How I Met Your Mother or something like that.
I will default to The Office. It used to be Scrubs. I used to default to Scrubs.
Psych, great
exactly.
Show.
Psych before the final season.
It's comfort food. I want to say it's basically the equivalent the television or movie equivalent of comfort.
The muffin.
Food. Yeah.
Yes, you know it's bad for you, but like it kind of looks okay, and frankly, you're going to enjoy it. But it's going to go all to your side.
I think at the same time, you're just like, movies that are so bad kind of make you feel good about yourself because you're not dumb enough to make those movies, I guess.
We are. One.
I mean, I don't know. I would put Coalition of Heroes above any of these movies.
Really? That makes you feel nice.
Well, if you want to have your own question or comment read on the show, we make weekly posts on Facebook and Twitter. We comment or reply. And we'll be sure to talk about it if you guys post. So, if you want to be heard, all you gotta do is speak up. And thank you guys for, I'm gonna say, a kick-ass discussion. And now we'll be moving.
Cocaine.
And now we're gonna move on to the more ratings part. And I'm going to. I just need each of you guys to rate this topic on a scale of 1 to 5 grapes in the mouth.
Oh, I was hoping letters to Jim's dad. all right, I will give this. You know what? I'll give this in a group setting. I will give this 3 grapes.
3 grapes? That's so low.
Yeah, no, because in a group setting, it wasn't like the worst bad movie I've ever seen. Or even the best worst bad movie I've ever seen. It was bad enough for me to enjoy it. The thing is, though, I don't know if I could have gotten through it if we weren't doing Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, really? Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
With it? Yeah. Because there are like some bad movies that I feel like I could just sit down and just watch and make fun of by myself. There are other ones like I need a group setting, you know. But I really enjoyed the format that we did it in, and like I said, 3 really enjoyed it. It was a fun time.
So I had a really good time watching this movie for sure. And while there are some parts of it that are like very clearly bad, I feel like it kind of makes the whole thing endearing. And I would give this 4.25 grapes. Out of 5.
At least you guys didn't hate it. I'm happy you guys didn't hate it. If you liked it, that's great. I'm going to award a gold star. The reward is given to the person who I think really best brought their interest to this episode, brought something interesting to talk about, both in like terms of interesting to talk about and also in their kind of interesting questions to bring to the table. And the gold star for this one is going to be the golden letter from Jim's dad.
Yes!
and I have to guess. No. I think you guys...
I'm going to guess who did better. What are you revealing to yourself?
I think you guys both did good, but I think I hate to give it to Pat, but I'm going to...
Ah, man.
Why do you hate to give it to
me? Because you already got the most gold stars, and if I have to catch up to you, I can't be feeding into the beast.
Okay, but like, if I deserve it, I deserve it.
No, screw that. I'm gonna kill you just like we tried to kill Jim.
Damn, I don't even want to give a fucking acceptance.
I think you both did really great jobs. I think you both brought really interesting things to talk about. I think Pat's enthusiasm kind of fed into it a little bit more. I think he was more excited about it and wanted to talk about it a little more. Just by like a hair.
I'll go with that.
All right. And that about wraps it up. I had a ton of fun. And thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys had fun too. This has been the Comic Gaming Program. I'm your host, Ryan, and you can find me at Ryan_MOSSB on Twitter if you ever want to contact me. And I'm again joined by...
It's me, Keenan Curtis. I'm available wherever Crunch Bars are sold. You can find me there.
Crunch, your favorite candy bar?
They're not just my favorite. They're the best candy bar.
I really like Bunch of Crunch, but I don't really like Crunch when it's in a solid bar.
Well, that's weird. Did you get that checked out? Like, an issue with your taste buds or something?
I don't know. I just like the Crunch more than I like the chocolate. Anyway.
Wow, that's like saying you can't breathe air.
What's up? It's, yet again, your boy Pat. And you can find me at Patty Ice Official on Instagram. You can find me at Pure Riffery on Twitter. I should probably figure out a way to make all of my handles the same, but I'm lazy, so.
All right, and then next week, our episode will be hosted by our very own Pat.
Hey, what's up?
I think the topic is going to be Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. Is that correct?
100% correct.
I just read an article recently.
I am so stoked.
They said it holds up, even now.
Honestly, yeah, it's probably my go-to game. Like, you have...
Is that the one where you can beat Darth Maul?
No, it's not. I don't think it is. But you have go-to movies, and I have go-to games. Like, if I'm ever feeling down, I just go on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and I pretend like
I'm grind it out, man. Just grind it out.
So next week, you will hear the story of a sad young Pat who wanted to learn how to skateboard, and then realized later on in life when he was 23 that he was actually goofy-footed, and that's the reason why he could never fucking learn when he was younger.
What's goofy foot? Is it like a tentacle?
You put your right foot at the front of the board instead of your left foot.
One of the great tragedies of our time.
It is the greatest tragedy of our time. It's not a story that the Jedi would tell you.
not from a Jedi. He said, ollieing out of the room.
We're going to be talking about the realism behind Tony Hawk and how I believe it negatively impacts the public opinion of skateboarding.
Oh, wow, really? Okay.
Interesting. I like that.
So, yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. So be sure to tune in next Friday, October 5th. And follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting hashtag CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a critical help to growing our show, and we'll read new reviews on the air. Anyway, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, and everything. And we will talk to you next week. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Ryan Mossbarger, joined by the representatives Keenan Kodish and Patrick Brehm. This episode is sponsored by Small Butts and Kids Television Programming. Live your life however you damn well please. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Colin Ketchin, featuring original music also by me. In our next episode, we will be discussing the legendary Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. Be sure to tighten your trucks and join us for that. We will see you next week, but in the meantime, thank you for listening to this.
This was fun.
This was delightful. I had a lot of fun. Now we're going to turn off the recording equipment and we're going to talk about Miami Connection for the next 2 hours. Now let's do it. All right. Bye.